Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast. This is the space and the place for leadership learning. I'm Joanne Smichael. I'm a speaker, an educator, a consultant, and a forever student of the world. Enjoy this episode. There is a new book that is already on the bestsellers list. It's about transforming organizational culture. The book is The Champion's Creed, Transform Your Culture Through the Power of Belief. The author, Ben Utecht, is here with me this morning. And welcome, Ben.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited for this conversation.
Well, I am too. I know a little bit about your story. You were an Indianapolis Colt. You were with the team when they run the Super Bowl. Interesting thing about you is that you had a deep desire to sing and enjoyed a short career as a singer, but neither of those things were your end game. You had and still have a deep interest in organizational change through the power of belief.
Yes.
Is that how this book came to be?
Oh, man. I mean, the short answer is yes. I mean, the book came to be because of, you know, the experience that I had in a world championship NFL locker room with Hall of Fame coach Tony Dungy. But it's really been a 13-year journey going from a motivationalist as a speaker to an operationalist as a chief culture officer. And really coming to this point where I realized in order to have my greatest influence around organizational culture, I've got to tell that story. And that was really where the Champion's Creed was born. It came out of my keynote presentation, which is the Champion's Creed. And then really being able to dive much deeper into how do you take these profound championship sport principles combined with my experience at an executive level in business and actually give people a blueprint, give them something actionable. And it resulted in probably about a year and a half of work, you know, to complete the book, but so excited that it's done and have some great endorsements. And Tony Dungy wrote the preface. So it's pretty powerful.
And your dad.
Yes.
The closing. So, but we will have the opportunity to talk about that because your dad and Tony Dungy seem to be pivotal forces in your life. So we will definitely talk about that. But I have to tell you, I need to talk about the singing career. I am really curious about the singing. You sang with Sandy Patty. Who gets to sing with Sandy Patty except other like famous people or other, you know, gifted voices? What was that about? Why did you do it? Or why is that a piece of the puzzle of your life?
Oh, man. I grew up in a very unique family. My dad was a pastor in the Methodist Church for almost 50 years. But before he went into the seminary, he was a vocal music major to be a choir teacher. And my mom was a singer. So I grew up in a home that celebrated athletics and the arts. And I was just drawn to both of them. You know, my
That's
mom.
Interesting. Athletics and the arts. I love
you know,
that.
It's a cool combination. And my mom would tell you that I've always been an entertainer. I've always loved being up in front of people. And, you know, so my degree was public speaking because I love to be a communicator. And I communicate through music. And I started singing and took on training as a young vocalist, and that led to meeting Sandy Patty when I was playing with the Indianapolis Colts, and her discovering that talent and giving me an opportunity to sign to her music label and work with her management, and so that's really where the opportunity presented itself to really head into professional singing, which I was able to do for many years, and I still do as a professional hobby, you know, all over Minnesota, especially in the Christmas season.
I love that. I love that. So I guess I need to get back to the book. Before I get back to the book, I think it's really neat that you have had multiple dreams and have had been blessed with the opportunity to live them out. You know, not everybody gets to sing with Sandy Patty and win a Super Bowl ring and have a successful career as a chief culture officer. So I think it's really says a lot about your determination and your perseverance and your blessings,
Yeah.
for sure.
And
For sure.
honestly, and just one side story on the Sandy Patty relationship. It was really cool. The year after we won the Super Bowl, she was doing an event with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra called Yuletide. And Yuletide lasts a month in December in Indianapolis. And so she had 32 concerts in 30 days with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. And I was pursued by them to join her for an epic duet at every one of these concerts. So I was so nervous, but I had a meeting with Tony Dungy and our general manager, Bill Polian, and they gave their blessing as long as it didn't affect my performance on the field. And so I was able to attend 16 of those concerts, and literally, I would end the football game on a Sunday, and I would run through the Indianapolis Skyway system to go from the stadium to the performing concert hall. And I would literally walk on stage with a blue and white tux, like the Indianapolis Colts colors, and sing with Sandy Patty during the NFL season. It was
I love
it
that.
was pretty amazing. It was
I
pretty.
love that. That is very amazing. Very, very. And I love that you had the blessing of your leadership, that they didn't decide to be stumbling blocks or hurdles.
I know.
Yeah,
And I
yeah.
write that story's in the book too, so
Yeah, that says a lot about them
exactly.
and their commitment to you having a well-rounded life. I remember reading, I don't know if I've read it in the book or if I've read it in your bio, about the fact that you were in college part of a fellowship of singing Christian athletes. Is that I just messed that up,
Yeah,
didn't
no,
I?
in college, yeah. So there were a couple of faith-based organizations that are really international now, and that was Athletes in Action and FCA. And FCA was great because it gave me a platform to, not only be a speech communicator, but to lead opportunities, for worship music and things of that nature. So it was, it combined, both of my gifts and passions.
So this singing with Sandy Patty was actually a long time coming. You were preparing for that, and you probably didn't even know
I didn't even know it. It's
it.
so funny because I was at a youth rally in Alexandria, Indiana, and I was speaking. And after I was done speaking, a woman in a Peyton Manning number 18 jersey comes running up to me with so much energy. "I'm the greatest Colts fan in the world. You're not going to believe it. Would you sign this autograph book for me?" And I said, "Sure. Who should I make it out to?" And she said, "Sandy Patty." And I like stopped in my tracks because, growing up in a pastor's home, all I ever listened to was Sandy Patty. All my mom would ever sing is Sandy Patty. So I knew exactly who she was, and I handed her back the autograph book, and I said, "No, you need to sign this for me, please."
I
And
love it.
that's where the relationship began.
I love that. Now, I promise we are going to talk about the book. However, I want to talk more about your journey.
Yeah.
We met at an American Brain Foundation event just a month or two ago. So I know that traumatic brain injury is part of your story. Tell me, what was that chapter?
Well, there's no getting out of the reality of injury in contact sports. And one of those injuries for me were multiple concussions. And that really sent me into a whole field of philanthropy that I never expected to be invited into. But my career ended due to concussion, and it was happening at the time where the concussion crisis in the NFL was spotlighted, and everybody was talking about it. And Will Smith just came out with the concussion movie. And so the injury was a focal point of discussion. And Because of the way in which my injury occurred, it really presented an opportunity for me to become a national advocate for brain health. And so I created a pro brain, pro game message that celebrated better education and awareness around the importance of our brain health. And at the same time, talked about how important sports are in the lives of, children, young adults, and adults. And that's where my relationship with the American Academy of Neurology started as their national spokesperson on concussion for a couple of years, and then transitioning to their public board at the American Brain Foundation, really to, provide an inspirational and educational opportunity to, be an advocate for traumatic brain injury
And brain health overall.
and brain health overall. Yeah, because of how interconnected, the diseases are, and obviously with concussion, you have chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE. And so if we can create more awareness, raise more funding, then we have better opportunities, to do the research and potentially find, a cure for these diseases that are interconnected.
If you cure one, you can cure many.
Absolutely.
So now, after the years of healing from post-concussive disorder, did you just come out of it with this burning desire to help organizations create a healthy culture?
I
It
think
doesn't seem like.
it's a great question, and I think my first priority was my family. And I have four beautiful daughters, and my whole world revolves around my wife and my four girls. And so at that time, it was really, how do I re-strengthen the cognitive abilities that were impacted by the concussion injury, because there were noticeable cognitive weaknesses that had arisen out of that injury. And I dedicated myself really over an entire summer, about 100, 150 hours of cognitive brain training to re-strengthen those neural pathways that were injured and potentially even create new neural pathways, to help me cognitively. And it was amazing. And, my pre and post neuropsych evaluation improved in some areas by 60, 70%. And so all of a sudden, like my wife will tell you, she got her husband back. And that was a pivotal time, because when your cognitive functioning is poor, it puts a lot of pressure on your behavioral tendencies, right? And you lose faculties like patience, or your ability to multitask. How do you handle chaotic situations that we find ourselves in all the time in business, especially when we're socializing? And so all of those improvements began to have positive transference effects on my behavior. And so that was really kind of, I think, a launching pad back into the fast moving, corporate pace of business in America, that ultimately put me on the path towards reaching my goals as an organizational culture leader.
So, Ben, I'm curious. You talked about spending a summer essentially working on your cognition. Do you do that with a therapist? What is that? What is that
No,
process?
I asked the same questions, and I actually was on a TV show here in Minnesota doing an interview, and one of the other interviewees was a founder of a franchise called Learning RX, and Learning RX was a cognitive brain training business, and they took neuropsychological testing and neuropsychological exercises and built a program around those to really help with learning disabilities. And so as I did my research on their company, I brought it to my friends and neurologists at the American Academy of Neurology, and they all told me it's rudimentary neurology that tells us you can strengthen cognitive weaknesses. And there's nothing about this program that can harm you. So, give it a try. And so I went to LearningRx and did a brain training program with them over a few months and met with a trainer 4 days a week, an hour and a half, each session. And it was like going into the gym for my brain, and having a certified brain trainer push me as hard as they could to improve my cognitive abilities. And it was wonderful.
And it's called Learning RX.
Yes.
And it's a franchise, so they're all over the US.
They're all over the US and even international now.
Oh, that's neat. And they work primarily with athletes or with other people as well.
Honestly, it started out as a company focused on helping children with learning disabilities. And as the company began to grow, they began working with young adults and adults. And so now it really serves, it's a multi-generational, business plan that's highly effective, if you go in and really put the work into it.
Well, that's very interesting. I never heard of that. So now, where did the burning desire to help organizations come from? Like, you went from the Super Bowl to Chief Culture Officer. I want to talk about why and then the highlights and the lowlights along the way.
Sure. I mean, the high was, sitting in that first team meeting with Hall of Fame coach Tony Dungy, who was the first to win a Super Bowl built on what's called servant leadership. His belief was that if you build better men, you get better football players. I had never heard that philosophy spoken the way that he presented it. And it was radical because he was emphasizing the same importance not only on improving as an athlete on the field, but also improving as a human being in life. And I'll never forget that first team meeting where we sat down and he came in and began talking and said, "Men, my job here is to win. But more importantly, my job is to build a family. And the acronym for family in football is forget about me, I love you,"
Really?
which is this powerful platform of humility and selflessness. And the goal of taking 53 of the most egotistical, confident, powerful men on the planet and getting them to, to trust and hope in each other. And so right away, I was kind of taken aback by how that first, team meeting began. And he continued to say, "Men, if you're sitting in this room and your entire identity is defined by a sport, you've completely missed the purpose of your life."
Wow.
And now I was like, "Okay, what's going on?" And I'm looking around the room, and everybody's bought in, and their heads are nodding in acceptance. And I knew there was something different about this team and this leadership style. And over my 4 years there, I got to participate in what was a default system of practicing human development in parallel with practicing becoming a better athlete on the field. And so when I retired and began speaking, my first question was, "What's my story?" And I couldn't get past the experience that I had in a world championship locker room with Tony Dungy and this profound approach to the importance of human development, in correlation with the radical importance of performance, right? Because you have to perform in business. Business is transaction, right? It's showing up every day and doing your job to the best of your ability. But if you improve the human condition at work at the same time, if you pour more purpose, more value, more significance into your team members, then they're going to give you more devotion and more commitment and more passion, right? Because they respect leadership and they feel valued within the organization. And so they're going to come to work every day fulfilled, which means they're going to fulfill And that was really where it began. And so I started thinking about, okay, how can I take all of these things I experienced and turn them into a program? And
Okay.
because that was Dungey's whole platform was culture does not have to be subjective, right? It's talked about in every business around the world,
Yes.
right? But many don't know what to do about it. It feels like this heavy burden, this weight, this big boulder. But Coach Dungey really showed me that, culture is a pebble game. Culture is about throwing pebbles into a pond over and over again with consistency and allowing the ripple effects, to join one another until you're consistently making an impact, across the top of the water. And that culture can be objective, that you can take a non-negotiable belief system and turn it into a practicable platform to actually develop your people back towards the core beliefs and values of the company. And that's really the seed that was planted that got me really passionate about organizational culture.
So that seed gets planted. You start this speaking business, and then what happens to get you into the corporate world? Because a speaking business is real different from becoming the chief
Yes,
culture
right.
officer.
Inspirationalist, but not an operationalist. And so, I spent probably about, I would say, 8 or 9 years beginning to open doors in the speaking community and start talking about culture in a new and inspirational way through the storytelling of what I experienced in the Indianapolis Colts. And over the process of that, I came into a number of very influential mentorship relationships with some of the top chief people officers and chief culture officers in the world, and that are, PhD level educators. And so I got to really start learning from these, incredible leaders in business on how to operationalize what I was talking about. And it was probably 3 or 4 years ago, as I was on that journey, that I met a founder of a large private equity company in Minnesota named Brian Slipka, who founded True North family of companies. And Brian was a servant leader business owner, and he really wanted to make his culture objective. And so he invited me into the C-suite of that organization as their chief culture officer. And now I had this really important moment in time where I got to go from being a motivationalist to an operationalist. And so over those 3 years was able to really create some objective products, strategies, and systems on how to actually implement, objective culture opportunities within the company that, help towards hiring to your culture and developing to your culture and even benchmarking through assessments, towards culture alignment to make sure that when we're hiring people, we're giving them the best opportunity to choose the right culture for themselves. And then we're also protecting the company on the back end to make sure that they have the best opportunity to hire towards people that share the same belief and value system that the company does.
So you've been there 5 years?
Yeah, about 4 years, 4 years actually.
Okay. Now I'm also curious about your dad. There's a passage early on in the book where you talk about his four-part creed. Explain how that creed is foundational in the work that you do now.
Well, first, it's important to know what a creed is. I didn't know what a creed was. I mean, I knew what it was in concept, but as I was really, praying about how do I bring a unique perspective into the culture conversation, the word creed was brought into my mind, and I thought, Apollo Creed from the Rocky movies? I mean, I was a little bit aloof on, on its application. And so I literally picked up my phone and I asked Siri. I said, define creed. And she said, a creed is a set of beliefs that guide the behaviors and actions of people. And that was the light bulb moment, was understanding the powerful foundation that belief has in culture. And then as I'm reading through some of the PhD curriculum from my mentors, to learn, I discovered that Dr. Edgar Schein, who we've talked about, defined culture as basically every culture in the world comes out of the espoused beliefs, assumptions, and artifacts of those beliefs. And it made me realize that maybe where we've gone, or maybe where there's been some misdirection in businesses, we always focus on the mission, vision, value. But the value principles that we choose actually originate out of these intrinsic non-negotiable beliefs that allow us to choose or empower us to choose the value principles, right? So if we believe that honesty and doing the right thing is foundational, we choose integrity as the value principle that's the artifact of that belief. But yet within the belief is the opportunity to build out a practicable system. And so that's really where I was able to begin to see, okay, how do we, Peter Drucker always says culture eats strategy for breakfast. And I always say false. And the reason why is because that statement separates culture from strategy. And I believe culture must be the strategy, and that every decision that we make has to come out of, a strategy that goes back towards the non-negotiable belief system, the objective belief system of the organization. And so values are important because they're the symbols, but the system, the objective practicable system, can be developed out of deeply understanding what we believe, why we believe it. Those are the assumptions. And most importantly, how do we actually tactically and practically practice these beliefs in an organization to develop our people? I thought that that was kind of a new and revolutionary way of approaching culture development within organizations.
So your dad, how did he impact us? Because you talk about him and he wrote
Oh, no. It's
the closing of your book. So
right.
what
So
seed did he plant around?
what I thought was so powerful about that, and there was this just epic moment at the beginning of the Super Bowl that I write about in the book, where I had this experience with my dad running out of the tunnel. And when we embraced and got to kind of relive the past in a moment of time, I was reminded of these four powerful beliefs, principles that my dad had installed into my identity growing up as a kid. And the first was to honor God, because I believe that playing for something bigger than yourself produces greatness. Right. And so, as a person of faith, that application is God. If you're not a person of faith, that application is the realization that your role in life is much broader and bigger than what you experience, and your ability to make an impact on everybody that comes in contact with you, right? So what is a purpose bigger than yourself? Because when you play for a purpose bigger than yourself, you raise the bar, right, beyond human capability. The second was work harder than everybody else, right? Because I believe hard work develops perseverance and character. The third was never, ever stop improving. Because, Ben, I believe that there's always somebody behind you that wants your job.
I like that.
Right? And lastly was, Ben, have fun. Because I believe if you don't love what you're doing, what's the point? Okay, and so these were three foundational beliefs that he instilled within me that I've really applied in my life, at every, throughout every decade, that really helped me not only ground me and develop myself as a young man into manhood, but also as a, as a business person or somebody who's an entrepreneur and passionate about singing and passionate about speaking and passionate about starting businesses. And it just laid the foundation as a as an objective example of how you can take a belief and actually develop a practicable system that can positively impact your life and your journey.
I think that's really, really, it's something that it is something that he saw these things as so meaningful that he made sure that his children or his, do you have siblings?
I do have a sister, I do.
Okay, that he made sure that his children, that you and your siblings, has something really tangible to hold on to get through life. So that's.
And honestly, it's so scalable because whenever I'm speaking, it's one of the questions I ask of the audience after telling that story is, how many of you in the room today have, whether it was a parent, a grandparent, a coach, a teacher, a friend, have applied foundational beliefs in your own life that have driven you towards your success? And the hands just shoot up. And you start asking for examples, and it's because belief is something that it universally connects all humans. When we talk about the things that we're most passionate about, that are most meaningful in our lives, we use the word belief, whether it's
Yes.
politics, religion, business, academia. If you're going to say this is important, you're going to say, "Well, I believe that." And so belief, is this universal concept that is already agreeable to the human condition. And I think that's so powerful.
I do too. Here's what I'd like. I want you to come back so that we can go deeper into the Champions Creed. It's a great book for leaders who are currently leading, but I think it's also a really good tool for up and comers, for people who are entering their first supervisory role.
Yes.
So I want to spend more time in that space. You open to coming back? You open to
Oh, I'd love
talking more?
absolutely, sure.
You mentioned your speaking career. How do people find you and get you as a speaker?
Thank you so much. Very simple. It's benutechspeaks.com. And really excited. I've done a total rebrand, so the new website should be done here in the next week or two, and just finished production on a new speaker reel. And with the success of the book, I think that there's going to be just an awesome opportunity, to really grow, that platform, and I again, I love it. I know that public speaking is one of the top phobias I think on the list, but for me, I feel like there's such a unique opportunity to, speak truth and inspiration into people, especially because we spend the majority of our lives working. It's so important to talk about how do you make culture objective and how do you see it as your greatest asset towards driving your revenue? It doesn't have to be the soft skills. We don't talk. It's the most metallic, hard skills that we have in business because it's connected to our greatest asset, which is
Humans.
humans.
Yeah, the people that get the work done,
Well,
for sure. So thank you. We're going to talk again very, very soon.
that sounds like a plan.
Thank you for listening. Be sure that you subscribe and share. You can get more leadership learning from my YouTube channel and by following me on Instagram. Reach out when you're looking for a speaker to energize your next event. Reach out when you need curated leadership learning for your organization. Reach out when you're ready for consulting that will help your organization fulfill its potential. I'm Joanne Smichel, and thank you for tuning in.